This is music from Taishan Sore. Welcome to The Checkout, also a podcast from WBGO. Subscribe to it on iTunes right now. I'm Simon Rettner. Is it jazz? Is it classical? Or is it just Taishan Sore? The drummer is our guest today, who's going to take us on a journey outside of the realm of jazz as we know it, exploring written composition and improvisation and where they both merge. This drummer, sometimes pianist, percussionist, and trombone player, was born and raised in Newark, New Jersey, and he has a flair for the avant-garde, and he's on his way to receiving a doctoral degree in composition at Columbia University. The inner spectrum of variables. That's what you're hearing right now. And we're going to talk to the drummer about it. It's a double trio recording, piano, bass, and drums, and with an unusual setting of a string trio all interacting together. This is The Checkout. I'm Simon Rettner. He's played drums for many notable musicians over the years, quietly lurking behind the kit, behind brilliant minds, artists, Vijay Iyer, Steve Coleman, Anthony Braxton, John Zorn, only to name a few. But if you were to ask any one of these musicians who might be the most talented cat in the room, it will be the man we are speaking to right now. Newark's own, welcome home, Taishan Sore, originally a trombonist on full scholarship at William Patterson, now mainly known for his composing and drumming, but plays some piano too. He has a recording called The Inner Spectrum of Variables. Tyshawn Sorey, it's a great pleasure to finally talk to you.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to come home and really talk about my work here in the way that I like and everything, and in a format such as this, which is incredible. And I've grown up all my life listening to this station. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're like straight out of the womb listening to WBGO, right?
That's right, yeah. making cassette tapes of, you know, broadcasts and stuff that you guys had and everything, and listening back to them on the school bus on the way to school and that whole thing. So, basically that was my life experience with you guys here.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Actually, you're one of those, like, freaks or obsessive, compulsive... making cassette tapes of our radio shows here.
Yeah, all the time. And my uncle also, who's an avid jazz fan, he too was a fan of BGO during those years. Even like you know, when it started and everything, he was listening to the station a lot and everything. So I would listen often, you know, to music with him or my father, who during that time was a record collector and had a lot of different kinds of music and stuff like that. He too would listen to BGO. So this was the, you know, either BGO or KCR, either one of those stations that would broadcast, you know, jazz from all periods, all different periods all the time. And so it was great to have that experience growing up.
So if we're just to get to the music right away, and we'll get to your music soon, I promise, but what is something that you heard here on WBGO at an early age that you would call formative?
Let's see. When I was younger, I remember hearing...
I mean, you do have an encyclopedic memory, so you got to remember something.
Well, you guys broadcasted at one time maybe a song or two from Dizzy Gillespie's To Bird With Love, which is an incredible live recording with Kenny Washington on drums, who I've never heard of at the time. But, like, the drumming was what really gravitated me, you know, towards the music and that kind of thing. Listening to him, you know, on this station... and everything was a really cool thing. And afterwards, I actually, sometime around that period also, I got to meet him actually at Newark Symphony Hall, gave a concert there at that time in the Terrace Ballroom. I mean, that was a life-changing experience for me. So to be able to listen to him on the radio and then to meet him in person, you know, was, I mean, I still have a photograph of a picture of me, you know, holding Dizzy's mutes and stuff like that, fumbling around with his stuff and everything. And he was the sweetest person who I could meet. I was only about 7 or 8 years old at that time, and but it was a wonderful meeting. Yeah.
So Tyshawn Sorey, since we've already acknowledged that you have an encyclopedic memory of sorts, what Dizzy Gillespie were you listening to as a very young child? What are we talking, 6, 7 years old?
Well, 6, 7 years old, at that time, I was listening a lot to Dizzy's early music, listening to a lot of the stuff that he did during the bebop period and all of that stuff, and checking out that stuff with vinyl records and, you know, things like that. My uncle would take me record shopping sometimes every other weekend or something like that, and he would let me pick out one or two records of, you know, who, you know, he would recommend a couple of people for me to check out, and one of those people was Dizzy, obviously. A lot of his bebop work and stuff like that, a lot of different things with Charlie Parker and Don Byas and people like that.
We're here speaking with Tyshawn Sorey, the Newark drummer and composer, but we're not here to talk about the old music. We're here to talk about the new music that Tyshawn Sorey has put forth, a recording that he calls The Inner Spectrum of Variables. I can't seem to wrap my head around the meaning of this title, so what does this mean?
Well, the title specifically refers to the composition itself in terms of what happens in the actual music and the realization of the music. Variability is something that, you know, that is in, I mean, that's something that's inherent in all of the music, you know, in this tradition that we're talking about, in jazz and everything like that, where, you know, so many different things can happen in a given performance of a composition. The inner spectrum of variables specifically refers to different things that are going on in a musical score where there is conducted improvisation, which I do with the ensemble and stuff like that. There's also...
In the vein of Lawrence Busch Morris, who
you
studied
with. Yeah, in that vein, yes. And also... There are prescribed written instructions into the score to do certain improvisational things, and there's the score material itself, you know. But also, within these prescribed directives for improvisation, we can choose to use those or not, you know, or we can choose to employ conducted improvisation or not. We can play the score completely as it is, and it would still be a successful performance. So, variability is like kind of the big thing. You know, that's in there, and there's so many different directions you can go within the score, so that's what I'm referring to.
Well, let's listen to the variability. This is Tyshawn Sorey on drums, Chris Tordini on bass, of course, Mike the pianist, and a string trio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The double trio.
Right.
Tyshawn Sorey joins us here on the checkout to talk about the inner spectrum of variables. I've read in an interview you like to obliterate the line between what is written and what is improvised and confuse the listener. So take us to a moment that you, on the recording, that is, in your opinion, the most deceptive, where one might think that was completely written out, but it wasn't at all.
I'd say the beginning of movement 4, around 3:30, around there, where there's the viola solo. There's like a solo viola passage that's happening with the strings playing this accompaniment underneath that. And a lot of people, you know, they say, oh, well, that was a great solo, you know, what you played or whatever. We did a series of concerts in Brooklyn of this piece, and people looked at the score and they were like, really? Was all that written out? You know? So also what I want to say with that too is how the performance dynamic kind of shifts that ideal or whatever, because the violist isn't necessarily playing it from memory, but oftentimes he's like communicating to all of us and like looking at everybody and, you know, that sort of thing. He doesn't have his eyes glued to the page. So that also gives the deception. of whatever is composed and what's improvised. And that's exactly what I go for in all of the music that I write. This idea where, you know, composition and improvisation, I mean, they're both the same thing. I mean, they're just one is a different process from another, and one takes a different amount of time than the other. But that viola passage and everything, you know, some people say that, you know, some people don't know whether or not that was written or composed, but in fact it was. You know, even when the drums come in and everything, that stuff that the viola player is playing, that's all written out. You know, that's all composed. And yeah, so that's, you know, that's an example of what I want to talk about. That's the most deceptive in the piece.
We are hearing it. Right now, we're speaking with Tyshawn Sorey, the Inner Spectrum of Variables on Pi Recordings, his latest double trio recording. We welcome him to our WBGO studios on the checkout. So the string trio, too, even though I'll know some of these cats, like Ruben Cadelli, who you've played with for very long. These guys probably make most of their money in the classical world, but they all are badass improvisers. Let's be frank.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Who are the other string players? Just to give all the names.
So Chernwei Fung, who is the violinist, Kyle Armbrust, who is the violist, and Ruben Cadelli, who is the cellist. Kyle, actually, you know, so, I mean, I wanted to have him because I knew of his skills as a violist already in the International Contemporary Ensemble with whom I also collaborate. So I thought, you know, well, yeah, let me see if he would be available and up for doing it since he wants to play and since he wants to jam with me or whatever. Miraculously, he was available and interested in doing the music. And Ruben Cadelli, I've known for forever. I mean, we're practically best friends. and we've first collaborated together in Dave Douglas's project. And I'll tell you an interesting story was that him and I, we were on a West Coast tour with Dave. And Ruben hands me this, he like plays this thing on a, at that time, mini disc recorders. We were still using those at that time. And so he had a mini disc of something that, a solo thing that he did, you know, with the playing with the line six and a lot of different effects pedals and stuff like that he did on the cello.
And he likes to loop himself into
exactly.
Solo.
Yeah.
He likes to go aggro on the cello.
Oh, totally. Totally. so he hands me this mini disc and he's like, you know, check this out. And I'm listening to that. And that piece still sticks with me today. Like every time I hear it, it just gives me chills because it's such a fantastic work. It's called Green, and it's for solo cello, and he's doing all of these different sorts of loops and things like that with the line six, and like it's like becoming more additive and additive and additive, and always adding more things to the music. And so that piece was actually what inspired much of this music.
Really?
yeah, definitely. That piece in particular, because I mean, because he was the person who I wanted to have from the get go. Then I thought back about that composition and I listened to it again. And it's like, you know, in fact, the last few minutes of Movement 2 actually is kind of have some derivation of that composition Green that I talked about. Perhaps in the piano part behind a viola solo that's happening there.
Well, let's listen to that right now. And we just heard a little bit of Green 2 so you can compare it for yourself.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's Tyshawn Sorey and the Inner Spectrum of Variables, featuring, shall we say, fragments of ideas provided to you by the cellist, Albanian player Ruben Cadelli. Ruben actually is a friend of mine as well, and he submitted some questions, a funny question. I'm just going to read it straight out.
Like,
because I gotta have his the tone and syntax, you know, just to get the Ruben flair.
Oh, here. Yeah. I'm ready.
Then why violin, viola, and cello? Why not a string quartet? Sorry to ask, but I'm just curious. Obviously, the music speaks for itself, but just wondering, why a string trio?
Budget. That's the first thing, is budget. Secondly, string trios, especially for the last 60, 70 years, is some of my favorite music to listen to of the 20th century. There's a lot of string trio recordings. Notably, Charles Warren's string trio, the great composer, Charles Warren. I think that piece was written in 1971, I believe, that piece. And it's a very striking work for that combination of instruments. And so that was what inspired me to keep it as a string trio. And also, I mean, besides budget, also there's a lot of string music that I've been listening to, you know, during the time when I was writing this this piece and everything. So
perhaps a Grigori Ligeti string quartet.
Yeah, that stuff, and also Feldman's music,
Morton Feldman.
Music.
Yeah,
a great bit of his music I've listened to, and violin, viola, cello. I mean, I just wanted that combination, and the concept of the double trio, too, which is also a different sort of construct that's taken away from the musical detail. But let me get into that for a second. The concept of the double trio is not necessarily to have two different trios sort of, you know, play off, you know, have this so-called jazz piano trio kind of be the featured group and have the strings kind of in the background. Too much of a lot of the music that I've listened to that would utilize something like this would often have the jazz group, you know, in the foreground and, you know, whatever the classical ensemble or whatever in the background. And there's no disrespect to those recordings. In fact, I love a lot of that music that comes from that. But what I wanted to do was something a little bit different from that, where the string trio and the piano trio sort of interact together. And not only just interact together as two trios, but also as three duos or something like that, or have, you know, have all of these different sort of relationships going on within the music.
We're speaking with the drummer, Tyshawn Sorey, composer, sometimes pianist, rarely a trombonist these days, but can do all of those things. We could talk for days about the idea of composition and written material versus improvised material. And you have said you almost put equal weight in ideas of so-called spontaneous composition with, I guess, what? A Bach fugue or something, like they're one and the same, which is actually kind of a radical statement, because I know there's a lot of people in the classical world that'll be like, that ain't music.
Yeah, right. To me, a mistake is an opportunity. A mistake is an opportunity to make something else that could not have otherwise happened during a performance or something. So everybody still to this day is so scared about the idea of making a mistake. Also, in a live performance, so many different things can happen. I mean, it's different from when you're in the studio and you're getting things perfect and you're getting a lot of different things together in the right way or whatever, and you know, in the quote unquote correct way or whatever. But in a live performance, I mean, almost pretty much anything goes. And so there's been many train wrecks that have happened in a lot of the live performances that we did, and actually those ended up being really cool mistakes that actually ended up being used on the recording. You know, so there's a lot of stuff. For example, in movement 4, what I talked
about. Well,
then
does the mistake make the music less music and more conceptual art?
It's more conceptual. I don't see it as less music or anything. you know, it's not really about the idea of a mistake. It's how you get out of it, and it's what you do with it, I think, is what makes it art or not.
So take us to a moment on this recording that you would call a train wreck, but how you navigated through it and got out on the other side okay.
I'd say probably movement two, around the sixth or seventh minute or so, around movement two, where the bass player is playing all this tremolo stuff, this double stop, playing in a tremolo.
Chris Tordini.
Yeah, Chris Tordini. And Ruben's like sort of, there was a point where I conducted Ruben to open up whatever was happening in that space within his part. He had a specific part that was written out, and I told him to develop it and do something with it. And so he starts to do something with it. But what ended up happening was that when I brought Chris and Ruben back in to play the written material, that didn't happen. And so Ruben is basically just holding this double stop that's going on. And the way that Chris responded was that he immediately went to the next measure and started playing. And then Ruben starts playing this double stop and gets speeding up and that kind of thing. And then he plays the written material. So that's an example of a train wreck, but it sounded so good. You know, that moment, you know, that really tense moment where you don't know what's going to happen and everything, I wanted that on a record, and so we kept it.
Let's listen to it. Tyshawn Sorey joins us on the Checkout, the inner spectrum of variables, the variability of music. I don't know. I don't like to use words like polymath or, you know, you reference a lot of information in general.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go anywhere from, you know, musically speaking, Otis Redding and John Cage, Steve Coleman, Prince, but also film and theater, visual art, Robert Rauschenberg, the amazing visual conceptual artist of the 20th century, Martin Scorsese, you're a big film buff, Werner Herzog and his documentaries. Where does this insatiable appetite come from, Tyshawn Sorey?
This, as music draws from life experience, so does my frame of reference in terms of what I deal with. This is music, this is all music and art and things like that that I've grown up with all my life. And so I find it.
To be clear, though,
yeah,
from an inside source, you come from the hood of Newark.
Right.
Which makes this even more remarkable in my estimation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm, you know, I've always been thought of as like a bit left of center growing up here, even by, you know, even by my colleagues or my school peers and everything. I didn't have any friends in school or whatever, which that's a different kind of subject, but.
No, I like that subject.
But yeah.
That kind of stuff is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't, so what were you like?
Well, I was always a loner. I was always the person who would be, you know, like while my cousins and people like that would be out playing outside or playing football or whatever, or riding a bike or, you know, or meeting different friends or whatever. Like I would be downstairs playing drums to a lot of different jazz recordings I would listen to and stuff like that.
Like what?
Like music, music with.
Give me a song. Give me a song.
Okay. R. Blake, You Will Get Sue. I'll tell you an interesting story. The first time I got on a school bus with a, you know, Walkmans, you know, they weren't really popular at the time, but they, you know, I mean, people had them, but I had this tape recorder with a, it with an external speaker on it. It was like a tape recorder, and so I would make these recordings at home, and I would listen to it on this little tape machine or whatever. And I brought it on a bus one time, and the bus attendant was like, what are you doing with that? Like, you can't ride with this, you know, on the bus or whatever. You're going to have to turn it off or whatever. And so...
What were you listening to?
Oh, there was some country music. there was some country music. There was some metal. There was some jazz. It was like a mixtape, you know, of a lot of different stuff. And so I come on there on the bus, you know, and you know, having Johnny Cash or somebody like that on there. And she's like, no. You know, meanwhile, there's like 10 other students on the bus. So I'm like feeling all bad about it. And so next thing you know, I come home. I ask my mom to get me a headset or to get me a headphone set or whatever. And so the next day when I get to the, you know, I'm thinking, well, If this bus attendant catches me again with this tape machine or whatever, she's probably gonna take it away or something. So what I did was I got on the bus and I snuck it on. And so when I get on the bus, I have my headset on, I have this tape recorder, this tape machine going and listening to my music, and I get off and I forget to put the tape recorder, the tape device away. And the bus attendant was like, she looked at me, she kind of looked at me for like 30 seconds, and she's like, okay, I'm going to let you bring this on, but don't ever, but make sure you hide it when you come on here and, you know, all this stuff. So from that point on, I mean, I was always kind of by myself and just, you know, kind of listening to my music on my own. And whenever people wouldn't find out what I was listening to, and I was like, why are you listening to that old stuff, man? You need to get with what's going on now. You need to get hip with hip hop, and you need to, like, because that was the thing, you know, it's like, you need to get hip with all this dance music. So I was getting heavily into that, you know what I mean, as well as some of this other stuff. And so the reason why I create music the way I do is from those experiences, you know.
And let's listen to that. This is The Inner Spectrum of Variables on Pi Recordings, Tyshawn Soray. Thank you. I should say that the album cover reminds me of a Gerhard Richter painting. It's very beautiful. So do you hear music when you, like, interact with other art? I mean, does music fly out of paintings for you?
It does. And in fact, you know, it's like Steve Coleman once said of me, I overheard him saying that he sees a lot of himself in me, which is an interesting comment, you know, that he
having
made.
Spoken to Steve Coleman on this show, I can definitely see that.
Yeah. Yeah. So he made that comment to a few of colleagues of mine. And then I realized, you know, that is actually true.
And that was boot camp for you, I should add. You were in the five elements early in the game.
That's right. That's right. But see, this goes back to, you know, to what I'm talking about in terms of, like, how you can translate some of this stuff or whatever into music, where Steve tells the story about how, you know, how he saw this mountain one time and he said to a friend or whatever of his that, you know, I want to play that mountain. And then the friend goes, well, maybe you're inspired by the mountain, or you want to play the inspiration. No, Steve's like, no, I literally want to play the mountain. Like, I literally want to do that. And so with art and painting and dance and different things like that, that's kind of how I see things too. It's like, I want to play something that literally represents whatever it is I'm observing or whatever, whether it's art, whether it's dance, whether it's film or whatever. I don't not too depictive, but at the same time, you know, something that
you want to capture the essence of something so completely that it is that.
Right, right, exactly.
Maybe abstractly, but it's still the essence.
It's still, yeah, exactly. So that's how I see my work in general, in terms of what it does and everything and how it relates to other medium.
And we're listening to it with the Inner Spectrum of Variables with Tyshawn Sorey on Pi Recordings. It goes in so many places. I, you know, can directly reference sort of French 20th century impressionistic ideas, free improvisation, as we mentioned before. But then there's this almost klezmer-like section later on in the piece. What's up with that?
Right. Well,
do you have dancers with that section?
I wish. it'd be some twisted kind of be a twisted kind of dance piece in Jewish music, but the section you're referring to, I think in particular, is movement 4, where it's actually derived a lot from klezmer music as well as Ethiopian jazz or Ethiopian music from Ethiopia. Listening to a lot of that music was what inspired movement 4 to take place, as well as the work of Abe Schwartz, as well as a lot of cantorial works by people like Moshe Kusevitsky, Yoseli Rosenblatt, people like that, people in the golden age of Jewish cantor music. So Jewish music is something that, you know, is something that I also love to perform on as a drummer and everything, and also as a trombonist. And I've done some klezmer music in recent years. I've been playing a lot of klezmer with different groups and stuff like that.
And we're speaking with Tyshawn Sorey on The Checkout, and it's been a great pleasure to speak with him. He has around 200 compositions under his own name, some of which hasn't been documented on record yet, but you can find what we're listening to, The Inner Spectrum of Variables, on Pi Recordings. And you premiered a piece recently at the Newport Jazz Festival, and that might have been your debut there too, right?
Playing That's right.
Newport?
That's right, yeah.
And now you're on WBGO Radio. What's going on? No, I'm just kidding. Tyshawn Sorey, it was really awesome talking to you and getting to know you as a person and where this music comes from. So thanks for hanging out.
Pleasure was mine indeed. Thank you so much.